It's not like me at all to recommend websites. It's not really, but it might be public knowledge. I don't know. I'm normally the last one to hear about these things. There's a website called Stories to Inspire. Have you heard about it? Stories to Inspire. So if you haven't heard about it, I don't feel. I'm very self-conscious because I'm normally the last one to. They send every day. First of all, it's got loads of stories. If you're ever looking for stories, there's hundreds of stories there. Brilliant stories, audios. Really, each of them 3, 4, 5 minutes. It's absolutely amazing. But just as amazing is that they send. You can send them an email, then they will send you every day new stories. So if you want to start your day with an inspirational story, that's the way to do it. Again, it's not my. I'm not so into. This is really, it's really, really nice. I just heard about this, so. I just thought, you know what, might as well share with others. So, yes, Stories to Inspire. I think it's very nice to know about it. Yeah. You know about it?
Yes.
It's very good.
What's today's story?
Oh, today's story. Okay, I'll tell you. It's really amazing. So, you've got it?
Yeah, topics.
Topics, yes. Yeah. Yeah. All the different topics. In each topic, you go on. There's loads of. It really is amazing. Okay, so the story that it's about the Ponovo Zhirov. Actually, it's a very nice story. Ponovo Zhirov, when he built the Ponovo Yeshiva, it's very famous. He had this vision of building Ponovo Yeshiva. I think it was he built this building on the slide hill. If you've ever been to Ponovo, it's on the slide hill. What does it say? What's the post that it says on the? In the Poshuk in the Shire, he had that vision of it. It was much too big when he built it. People thought it was absolutely. People had really thought. They heard his first hand from somebody. They thought he had gone crazy over the war because he lost everybody in the war. So people thought he was absolutely crazy that he had that vision of building such a. He had three bochim and he built the yeshiva which had space for hundreds. And people thought he had gone nebuch over the. But people wanted to be respectful and they didn't. So. But he built that yeshiva, and then when he put that first stone on, it was a massive simcha of building the yeshiva. And he said, "You think that the yeshiva started now? I'll tell you the truth is that the foundation stone of the yeshiva didn't happen now. The foundation stone of the yeshiva happened 50 years ago." He said, 50 years ago? What happened 50 years ago? He said, "No, actually, the start of the yeshiva was 50 years ago." He said, "Because what happened was as follows. Ponovo Zhirov says that it was a freezing cold winter. And he said that he was a young child. He was 4 years old, and he was so cold that it was dangerous to go outside, especially where he was in Ponovich in Litter. It was absolutely dangerous to go outside because of the freezing cold. And furthermore, particularly if you're poor and you didn't have the right foot gear, it was particularly dangerous. And by that family of Kahanemans, that's what they were called, Mishpachas Kahane, they had no money and they didn't have enough shoes for all the children." And the mother said on the night before, the father and the mother of the Kahneman said that, "Listen, it's too cold. Tomorrow, no, you can't go to cheder, you can't go to learn. It's too cold, it's too dangerous to go outside. I'm going to pick one of you. There's one only sufficient footwear for one of your children. One of the boys can go to yeshiva and to learn. Although everybody else has to home." And they started fighting. He said, "No, I want to go. I'm the oldest." And he said, "No, I've got more because." Everybody had his reasoning why he should be able to go. It's quite the opposite nowadays, no? Nowadays you'd fight about staying at home. There they fought about going to yeshiva and they said, "I'm going to take a goyel." So the mother said, "I'm going to take a goyel and now when you're going to sleep, I'm going to take a goyel and whoever's name is picked is going to go to yeshiva. Tomorrow you can have the boots and go to yeshiva. Everybody else has to stay at home." And he describes the problem is they all said they benched like never before and they said to Tehillim afterwards that they should be picked. The name should be picked. Can you imagine that? 4-year-old children, 5-year-old, 6-year-old children. They said to him that they should be picked to go to yeshiva the next day and to school the next day. And so they benched and they davened, said Tehillim and everything and they went to sleep. In the middle of the night, 4 o'clock in the morning, the mother wakes up the oldest and was it me, was it when I picked him, he says, "Listen, go get dressed, I'm taking you at 4 o'clock in the morning." And she took the oldest on the shoulder and she wore the shoes and she took him to she slept him an hour to the yeshiva and she came back And then when she came back, she tapped the shoulder of the second one. She said, was it me? Or am I being picked? Am I being picked? She said, get dressed. I'll take you to shiva. And she walked 1 hour each way. And for every one of the children, I don't know how many children was, she slept in through the snow. And it was 20 minutes normally, wasn't it? It took an hour through the snow, to plow through the snow in the freezing cold, until she brought every single one of them to yeshiva. The four-year-old Yosef Shlem was the future Panavezhov. When he was 4 years old, she carried him on the shoulder. She was the last one. She was very tired by then. And then he nudged her and he said, Mommy, think that you like you're most an effish now for me to go to yeshiva. I promise you that I will one day ensure that others are going to go to yeshiva and learn. That's what he said. Yeah. And he said that 50 years later, he was to build upon his yeshiva. Yeah. Okay. So, this is one of the hundreds of stories there. Okay. Good. Okay, Rabbi, we are up to Simon Tov Nun Beis. We're going to be learning Sivov and Siv Zayin, which will take us literally a few minutes. After that, we'll be starting a new topic altogether, which is Ilchas Dine Achitim with Chinosan Lematzois, which is a completely new topic, which we're going to be starting literally in a few minutes. So we're up to page 92 in our editions, just completing the halachas of Agola. Sivov teaches us the following scenario regarding a very large pot. How do you kasha an exceptionally large pot which cannot be immersed in another pot because of its size? What do you do about it? Shulchan Aruch explains as follows. Sif Vav. Kli godoil, a large vessel, she'einu yochoil lehachniso lesoich kliacher, which cannot be immersed into another keli to be kashered, machmas godle, because of its own size. How do you kasher it? Oise sofo lefiv. What you should do, you should make a sofo, a lip, lefiv, around the edge, around the lip. Yeah, you should create around it an additional layer, betit, with cement, kdei sheismale heitev v'yagia mayim besfosoi, that once you've created that additional layer, so when it bubbles, when it boils, the water goes up, it will go over, it will the whole pot, you fill the whole pot with boiling water, which is kashering itself. You're kashering the pot in its own right, but you want to ensure that the lip also is kashered. Therefore, you're adding an additional layer, and that will hold the water, when it boils over, it will hold the water to kasher the lip. So the lip is also going to be kashered by the bubbling water which goes on the side. So like this it's held, and like this it's kashering the lip. But you have to add an additional layer of cement. Yeah? So, oise sofo lefiv, if you make a lip around, betit, with cement, kedei sheismale heitev, so that the whole pot gets filled, v'yagiu amayim besfosoi, and the water reaches its lip, and that fills the water matichoy and boils up the sides, the lip, the top, and that will, not the sides, it will fill up the edge, the lip, and that's the way you're kashering it. Or alternatively, you take a firing stone, a boiling stone, a pit, a furnace, and you put that into the fire, whilst it's still fire, that's how you're eating up the, you throw a boiling stone into the water, that boils the water in its own right, and that will go over the border. So Shulchan Aruch says two options how you can kasher this big oversized pot. Either you fill it with water and you add a cement layer, so when it overflows it's held a little bit on top, because you want to kasher the lip as well. Alternatively, you bubble it, but you throw an additional stone over in as well, a stone which is like fire hot, and that spritzes over, and that kashers the entire pot as well. And that's the way to kasher it. Now normally, the Mishnah Berurah points out, that normally you'd do it with dough, a layer of dough, but obviously you can't do that when you're kashering the Pesach, and therefore you're doing it with cement. Siv Zayin, learning an ishtof akli b'mayim korim. After the kashering process, you will also rinse it with cold water, b'mayim korim, with cold water, ach agola, after the agola, miyad, immediately. The reason Mishnah Berurah Siv Kotel Lamed Zayin explains, miyad, kidei shel yachzav li v'mayim roischin shalem, that you've got to rinse it with cold water. Why? Let's say you kasha a spoon. Let's say you kasha a fork. Why, after the kashering process, do you need to pour cold water over it? Because how did you kasher it? With boiling water. What did the boiling water do?
Took out
the blias, the issa. Okay, but now what could potentially happen again? You go back in. So in order to avoid that, we rinse it with cold water. Because once it's cold, what will happen? No blias. You can't go in. Therefore, it's of utter importance to rinse with cold water after...
Straight after.
Yeah. You rinse with cold water. Which, in practical terms, let's say you're kashering a spoon, yeah? You're kashering a spoon in the... So after you take... You're holding it with a... How are you holding it?
Metal
plant, yeah, whatever. So, yeah, you hold it with plastic, you put it in the boiling water, it's bubbling, it's fine, you keep it in for 1 or 2 seconds, you can't just literally like in and out. It has to be in there for a second or two because we say that the place might take a second to go out. So, you keep it in there for a second or two, which the shalach is not mentioned. You keep it in a second or two, and after you take it out, but after you take it out, you immediately put it on the cold water so that the place don't go back in. And that's what we're learning over here. You have to put it after it's in cold water. So that the water which is full of blias will not transmit the blias back into the keli. However, if you failed to put it on the cold water, even if you didn't pour cold water at all, it doesn't matter. Because again, this is before it's become, because either it's Einu Ben Yoimoy, or it's before the Zman Issa, or Shesh Barim Shesh Connector, or it could be that there is 60 in the water against the Blias. So either way, it's because of the reasons that we spoke about last week, it's not lap. All those reasons, Salamaisa, even if it does go into, it doesn't really go back into the keli. Nevertheless, we are machmir, we put cold water. Rabbi Sai, if any of you kasher the kitchen, if you've got a metal surface and you're kashering the kitchen with eoi clearation, with pouring hot water, does anybody pour hot water over the kitchen? So here again, the challenge is, you have to pour hot water over the surface. Again, as we discussed, the only area which is kashered is the area that the water spritzes on, that it went on. The areas that might be boiling out and steaming as well, but that is from the indirect continuation of the flow, that is not kashered yet. It's only the shficha, b'makom ha-shficha, the area literally where the water spritzed. After that, what you've got to do is you have to pour cold water in that area to cool it all down. And after that, what do you have to do? You have to dry it. Why do you have to dry it? Because if it's wet, what are we going to say? Let's say it's a bit wet. Okay, I kashered, let's say, this corn over here. I threw in, now I poured cold water. Now it's all sopping wet. Now if I would make another, if I pour now this area over here, I want to pour on this area over here, and I kasher this area, and it's still a little bit wet. What am I going to say? What happened? It probably only because it's a shvicha from top. It's an iroi. Iroi can only kasha at the mekel ebola. He can only the cliff. He can only kasha the upper surface, the top surface. And we're going to say therefore it's only going to kasha the water, and it will not hit the surface underneath it. Consequently, it's absolutely crucial that it's bone dry. If it's not bone dry, the kashering failed. Because we're going to say that the shficha that was poured over here only kashered the water and it didn't kasher the area underneath it. Therefore, it's a very long process to kasher the metal surfaces because you pour and then only that area was kashered. You have to pour cold water over it. You have to dry it completely. And there you go. You go to the second part. And like this, it will take many, many shvichas. A sink alone takes a long time to kasher because literally only the area where the water fell, only that area is kashered, which needs quite a long time.
Why couldn't you just use hot water and then dry instantly? Why do you need to cool it down first?
You're right. If you are able to dry it instantly, I agree with you. Why are you basing your argument on?
There's nothing for it to absorb.
Yeah. If you're quick enough, I technically, I'm not able, because it's so hot, I can't dry it so quickly. If it works, if you don't burn yourself, yes. It says, Noegen lishtof akli b'mayim korim. I suppose you don't have to, yeah, if you're able to dry it, I suppose it's fine. If when it comes to a sink, just put the tap on quickly, and I find it much quicker. But yes, we have to make sure that we really, yeah, there is, it's hard to completely dry it. I feel it's really hard to almost dry it every time again. You dry it so many, because it takes many rounds to do it. But that's the way to do it. It's also the shficha. Also, I find it quite hard. I don't know how you do it. How do you measure exactly the area where the shficha took place? It's very hard. It's very hard to literally see exactly. You need a lot of expertise to see exactly, because all the steam that comes out, to see exactly where the shficha, where the pouring went. Because again, if you, that's the only place that is kosher. Okay, having said that, we can start Simon Tov Nun Beis. Dine Achitim V'Tchinosam L'Matzois. Now, after having discussed extensively everything which has got to do with the Hagolah, and indeed everything which has got to do with Bale Roya Bale Motze, and everything that's got to do with Issa Achilas Chametz, now we are making a full stop, new paragraph. In fact, not just new paragraph, but new chapter. We're now going to be discussing a new topic altogether, which has nothing to do with the Isurim, which we've discussed until now. What we're discussing now is actually the Mitzvah. From now on, Simon Tochnun Gimel will address the Mitzvah of Pesach, which is what? Starting with the most, the primary mitzvah, which is, of course, the eating of the matzah on Leil Pesach. So this is not referring to the Isurim anymore, which we've discussed, Bali Roe, Bali Matzah, and the Isurim of Chametz. Now we're discussing the mitzvah, which is a new topic altogether. The first question is, what exactly is included in the mitzvah? What exactly defines a matzah? So the Shulchan Aruch says that a matzah is defined as follows. Eilu dvorim, these are the things, these are the ingredients. Shiyotzim boim yidechoyv as matzah. These are the ingredients, these are the items that a person can be yotzechoyv as matzah. Bechitim, with wheat. Uvesa'oyrim, barley, kusmimis, spelt, shiboy leshual is oat, veshipon is rye. Now, it is not a coincidence that those are the ones that become that can become chametz. No coincidence, because the Gemara says that you can only be mekayim the mitzvah of matzah with items that could potentially become chametz, and that's an interesting topic. But that's the reality, that you can only fulfill the mitzvah with something which become chametz. Which, in other words, if you have an item which is not chametz and cannot become chametz, you, by definition, cannot be mekayim mitzvah matzah. And the primary example of that is what the Shulchan Aruch is going to say now. And the minig is to take away wheat as opposed to other materials. But not rice. Rice is a beautiful example of something which is not chametz, because it cannot become chametz. So, precisely because of that, you cannot do mitzvah of matzahs with it, because it cannot become chametz. Avloy be'oyres, not b'sham mina kidneys, and any other kidneys. Gam einon boim lechimutz, they cannot become chametz. Umut elasam etem b'sham tavshel. Of course, you can eat. That kol shulchan aruch, you can eat kidneys and you can eat rice, but you cannot become the mitzvah with it. Because they cannot become chametz. Okay, we'll discuss this in greater detail tomorrow, Mitzvah Hashem. First, if cotton Mishnah over here, his shiyotzim bohem b'leil rishon shel Pesach. We're addressing over here the first night of Pesach, of course, in Chutz Laaretz also with the Rabbon on the second night of Pesach. So, just to summarize, we learned this evening, we spoke about the two ways of kashering a particularly large keli. Option number one is that you make a rim around it, and you fill it with boiling hot water. It's bubbling so much that it spritz from the top. It's held by the rim that you've created to some extent, and that's how you're kashering the lip. Alternatively, you're boiling with boiling hot water. You put a stone in, which is itself like fire hot. It spritz over, and that itself kashers the keli. That's option number two. We learned also that the minig is to put cold water after kashering, whether it's a whether it is a keli or it's a pot or whatever it may be, you pour cold water after the kashering process. The reason is because we don't want the blias that have come out return now. This is only a chumrah because really, what anyway, can't go back in. But nevertheless, that's the minhag. Then we start to talk about Siman Tov and Gimel with regards to chitim and chinos and matzahs, and we learned that you can only make mitzvahs matzah with the following matzahs which are made out of chitim, so'im, kusmi, shpoil, shul, shipoin, which is wheat, barley, spelt, oat, and rye, and the minhag is always to take wheat. Rice, however, and kidneys, you can only make the mitzvahs matzah with them. Good evening, Abbasai.